wake-up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, good Monday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It is the AFC North Week. Baltimore Ravens on the clock today. We'll have Ken Wyman in hour number three out in Baltimore to talk about a Ravens team. Very interesting offseason, wasn't it? Remember when it was all about Lamar Jackson and his contract and wanting guaranteed money, and they franchise tagged him, and he was looking to get all of it guaranteed, and nobody bit on the line. And the Ravens had the opportunity to match any offer, and nobody went fishing. And next thing you know, the Ravens and Lamar Jackson had a huge deal, and it was all over. But it wasn't fully guaranteed, but it didn't seem to matter. It was a good deal. So then people could really start focusing on the Ravens and Todd Monken coming in, and also what the team was last year when Lamar Jackson was playing. They were 8-4, and then what they were when he wasn't playing, which were they were 2-3. But they had a really good showing against Cincinnati in the playoffs without Jackson, and with all these conspiracy theories about whether or not he was not playing or he's more hurt than saying he was more hurt than he actually was because of the contract. It was not a good time, but all that is in the past. And now you can look ahead to a team that has got Odell Beckham Jr. coming off the torn ACL from the Super Bowl. It took last year off. They drafted Zay Flowers. You can see more wideouts in the offense. And we'll get more and more into the preview of that really interesting team throughout the show today. But we've got to talk right off the bat about the Pac-12, because rest in peace Pac-12, because it is down now to the Pac-4, and it is basically on life support. So over the weekend, and it really began on Friday with the announcement that Oregon and Washington were moving on to the Big Ten. And then right after that, within a day, I think it was Saturday, it was announced that Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah were heading to the Big 12. This is added to the fact that UCLA and USC really started the domino effect in the first place, announcing about a year ago that they were going to go to the Big 10. And then just before Pac-12 media day, Colorado announced that it was going off and going back to the Big 12. So now it is down to four schools. You've got Cal, Stanford, Oregon State, and Washington State. That's it. And that means this conference is dead in the water. They're either going to jettison and form an alliance with another conference, or if they survive by adding smaller schools to it, and it just becomes like the WAC. It becomes a very small conference that doesn't have the impactful power that it once did. I know this has been tough, and I really am looking forward to the moment when we really start looking at the college football season for the action on the field and who is going to be a player and who's not going to be a player in the national championship conversation, who could win this conference, who could win that conference. But the entire summer has been nothing more in college football than this, the conference realignment. And it is an important topic. It is an important story. You're not only talking about the way the college athletics are going to be looking for a new generation of fans, but we're also talking about an older generation of fans who now have to adapt to a world in which things that they have thought were going to be permanent for the rest of their lives are not permanent anymore. You can say that teams may come and go, right? That maybe a team leaves, maybe a team is added. You can live with that. But imagine living your entire life in the West with Pac-12 football, back when it was the Pac-10, and thinking that conference at least would never go away. And now it's about to go away. That's the new world we're living in right now. And it was mismanagement from the get-go. Once that this conference started settling into a routine, the shaping of college football and the landscape around it, it never fit in to what the Pac-12 wanted to do. They were more concerned about building a Pac-12 network nobody wanted on their TV. They did not see the writing on the wall when it came to the new distribution of media rights. Basically, you have a conference in that where Oregon reportedly didn't want to go and ended up going anyway. You have a conference in which Arizona and Arizona State would have liked to have stayed in the Pac-12. When they joined it in the 70s, they were very committed to the conference, and yet they couldn't help but go to a conference where there's money. It all comes down to the distribution of media rights. And the fact is that the Apple TV deal was pretty good, but again, it required the schools to get subscriptions. If they had reached certain subscription goals, they would have made more money. But the reality of it is you can go over to the Big 12, you can go to the Big 10, you can form this mega conference, and you can get paid immediately. As you get as you now join this conference, and you can just continue to just bask in that media rights. And that's the world college athletics is living in right now, is which media company is going to pay the conference the most, and now you get to you try to join that. And that's what it's all about. And that there is no sense of unity enough within the conference of teams that want to make that conference better. And I think that's the underlying problem with all of this, is that in the end, my franchise, quote unquote, is more important than the greater good. And that's what you have. They've got to pay for the golf team, the diving team, the swim team, the track and field team, the equestrian team, whatever it is that they have. They've got to find a way to pay for the non-sports revenue, and they do it with media rights for the revenue-generating sports. But when you had a unified group of USC and UCLA and Oregon and Arizona State and Arizona and even Colorado, and you had a feeling like we're just going to find a way to make this work together, we are going to get the right commissioner, and we are going to hang in here, and we're going to let people know how important we are, then you would have a stronger conference presence. But you don't have that anywhere, and why should you? If you're USC, right, and USC and UCLA were the ones that started this whole thing, you're USC, you go, look, we've got LA, we're pretty powerful, we had a strong presence in college football for a while, you're UCLA, you know your history, you know your power, why would you even hang around other schools that are basically irrelevant in the conference? Colorado has been terrible. Colorado has been terrible since it arrived there. So now you just sell your brand. You just sell your brand. You don't care about dragging others in. You don't care about elevating other programs. And why should they make money off your back? At least that's the mentality of these schools, and why now they're selling themselves and saying, you know what, let's just formulate. If you're Oregon, why in God's name would you want to go to the Big Ten for any other reason than the media rights deal? You were in a conference you could win. You were in a conference you could dominate. You were in a conference, and if you did dominate, you got a lot of national attention, enough to be a part of the playoff. Now you're going to an 18-team mega conference with Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, and you're going to compete there a day in, a week in, and week out? Right? Nobody really wanted to do this. They weren't really wanting to kill this conference, but they had to. There was no other choice. They had to. And it was a slow death. It's that old cliche. It's a death by a thousand paper cuts. It is not quick, and it may seem quick because of what happened over the weekend, but it was a long time coming. It was a long time coming with a new commissioner that had absolutely no idea what he was doing. None. But it also stemmed from Larry Scott, who also had no idea what he was doing. You've got to get the right management at top. Brett Uermark came in to the Big 12 and understood the problem. What was the problem for the Big 12? They just lost Texas and they just lost Oklahoma, so you replace them with cities. I've been saying this for a while. You can't replace Texas on Texas size. You can't replace Oklahoma on Oklahoma size, but you can replace them with cities for schools that were in conferences that were dying to be Power Five. And that's what they did. They didn't pluck anybody from the SEC. They didn't pluck anybody from the Big Ten. They went, where are these smaller conferences most vulnerable? Their markets. Houston was begging to be in a Power Five conference. So was Cincinnati. So was Central Florida. And you just had the cherry on the top of the sundae, you bring in BYU. That's how you win the game. Did the Pac-12 do any of that? Hell no, they didn't. They had no idea what train was coming. And when the schools went to them and they went to George Kalikov and said, where's the media rights? And he said, hold on, it's okay, it's coming. Deion Sanders is getting hired at Colorado. And when that actually finalizes and takes place, I'll have the media rights deal for you. And there wasn't one. And because there wasn't one, bye-bye Colorado, bye-bye Arizona, bye-bye Arizona State, Utah, Oregon, Washington, see you later. And now they're the Pac-4 because they couldn't see what was miles and miles down the road. And so over the weekend, it wasn't a slam into a wall that appeared out of nowhere. It was a slam in front of a wall that was always, always coming. And they couldn't read it. And they couldn't see it. And now one of the greatest conferences in college football athletics is dead. And it hasn't been very relevant recently. But think of the names that have come from this conference over a century. It is remarkable. This is where Jackie Robinson played college ball. This is where Bill Walton, Marcus Allen, this is where Aaron Rodgers threw footballs. This is where Marshawn Lynch ran a football. Right? This is a conference that has a real rich history, and it was dead because of greedy commissioners like Tim Scott and a guy in George Kalikov who had no idea what he was doing. It's really insane. It really is. But it really, in the end, should have never come as a surprise to anybody. Because this is just the way it is. And that's just the way it's heading. And to me, again, we're not done. That's what makes us interesting. We're not done. Florida State last week been screaming to the high heavens how they want out of the ACC. So we've got a bunch of ACC schools going, well, if they go, I'm certainly on the boat for going. So Clemson, North Carolina, Florida State, they could be selling their brands pretty soon. And we'll be down to 2-3 conferences. That's it. Bye-bye, everybody. Don't, you know, turn out the lights when you leave the building. So ridiculous. All right, more on that, but we'll also get to some other things going on in the NFL. Also, the soccer match over the weekend that was lost by the women's soccer team at the Women's World Cup. It's all coming up this hour as Wake Up Call continues.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue in his wake-up call. By the way, I said Tim Scott, I meant Larry Scott. Tim Scott's Same running thing. For president, I think. So I meant Larry Scott, the former commissioner. It's just an unbelievable mess. It's a mess. It's sad. It really is. And I'm not even a West Coast guy.
No, and that's the problem I was having. I am a West Coast guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of tradition. I mean, you kind of knew it was dead when UCLA-USC left.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, okay, you lost your two bread and butter teams. But, you know, it's not surprising to me at all because the Pac-12, for whatever reason, has not been able to secure a media deal, which is surprising on its own.
Yeah. And listen, I know people want to talk about how, look, in the end, there was a big chunk of time where the Pac-12 football wasn't very good. And that's true. Right? I mean, Arizona and Arizona State weren't that great. Colorado has been terrible. Yep. Oregon was okay. Washington flirted a little bit.
Yeah, but, like three teams.
USC was trying to – I mean, USC was doing the Ed Orgeron, Steve Sarkisian, Lane Kiffin. Like, that was a mess, right, for a period of time.
Post-Pete Carroll days.
Right, post-Pete Carroll days were not really very easy for the Trojans. But
then you had the emergence of Oregon and Nike.
Yep, Oregon, yep. But
I say Nike because it's Nike University.
Sure. But when they got to the playoff, it was one and done quick,
quick
out when they got in, if they got in at all. I mean, you'd have Stanford played well and with Andrew Luck days. Utah has been pretty much the bread and butter for the last 2 years winning the conference. But the fact of the matter is that they didn't secure the deal because the Big 12 gobbled it up first. And that here's the problem with media rights deals is that you end up what you end up happening is when a conference has its ducks in a row, right? They're able to secure the media rights deals, right? So they go and say, here's the deal. And then the media company goes, great, we'll negotiate with you. Here's all the time slots that we're going to be utilizing for your games. And here's the money. And then when it's time to do another media rights deal, it's like, well, there's not a lot of money and there's not a lot of time slots left. So it becomes a problem when you are the Pac-12 and you wait and wait and wait. And the thing you come up with is the Apple subscription thing. Now, Pete Futek, who we had on Friday, has you know, in his column over the weekend, he said, look, the Pac-12, Pac-12 Apple deal was actually pretty good. It would have paid the schools more money had they reached a subscription, a certain threshold. But I think I'm going back to the way I thought about it. I don't think schools really want to do that. I think schools just want to get cut a check. I don't think they want to sell. I don't think they want to be concerned about where the money is coming from, if there's being successful or not. It's going to be unfair to schools that aren't very good, because Stuart Mandel pointed this out in his article over the weekend from The Athletic, is that people say all the time, especially in the Southeast, they say, well, people in the West Coast don't like football. They don't care about football. They do care about football. The problem is they're apathetic when the product isn't there, right? So other programs, South Carolina is a perfect example of this. South Carolina is a mediocre program at best, all right? When Spurrier was there, they won 11 games, three straight years. It's the best they've ever done, ever. They've been hovering around a 500 or worse football team for a century. But they sell out every single game at Williams-Brice Stadium. That people just love Gamecock football. They're going whether the team is good or bad. That's all they got. That's what they want. Great, right? It's the same in a lot of pockets of the country, especially in the Southeast. You know, you can go to Jordan-Hare Stadium in Auburn. You can go to places where maybe the football isn't great, but they're showing up. And that's not the case in the Pac-12. If USC is playing great, you'll fill that Coliseum. If they're not, it's half-filled. It's the same thing at Colorado, same thing at Oregon State, same thing in a lot of schools. So what they're worried about was, okay, if you just gave us a check, we'd be fine. If you that would be great. But if you're making us sell, well, if I'm Stanford, I'm going to go like, all right, can I get the same amount of people to sign up for Stanford football as Arizona State can? A big public school in Phoenix, Arizona? I'm an elite, more Ivy League, but not Ivy League institution. Like, can I do that? Can I get millions of subscriptions or hundreds of thousands of subscriptions for our not so good football? Like, maybe Arizona State can do that. Maybe Arizona could do that. Maybe Oregon can do that. But I don't think we can do that. What does that mean for us? Do we get a cut of their subscriptions since we're playing them and we're all supposed to be in this together? Is there a way that I get this money? And I'm sure there was, because it can't just be that you're cutting huge checks to Oregon because they have a more energetic fan base for a team that is kind of near the top of the football standings than a school like Cal. But it seemed like that wouldn't be as attractive to me, even if the end result was I could make more money than what the Big 12 would be giving me. I think the Big 12 offers you guaranteed money, and I think there's a difference. And you don't really want it to fluctuate. But I don't know if this is like, you know, I had some people over the weekend. We had some family and friends, and I was asked if I thought this was good, and I said, I got to be honest with you. I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be good. Like, it feels like it's not, right? It feels like it's not. But now we get an 18 super conference that's going coast to coast from Rutgers in New Jersey all the way to Seattle and USC and UCLA. Like, I've never seen that in my lifetime.
Welcome
I'm kind of curious. I'm kind of curious of what that's going to look like. You know, I'm kind of interested in that. All right, we got the SEC with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma. They're now 16 teams in that conference. The Big 12 has exploded. I mean, they just added four new teams.
And wasn't it just
plus
like
four more new teams?
And wasn't it just like, I want to say it was like 3-4 years ago, they were dead?
They were dead.
I mean, yeah. It was like, oh, the Big 12 is gone. They're down to like, you know, no teams left.
Everyone's
leaving.
Yep.
And then overnight, it feels like now it's like, oh, well, they got all the teams. They're good.
They were aggressive, and I got to tell you, they learned what this new business is. But there's a couple of things here, man. We've got to understand something, and we've known it, but people are now starting to say the quiet part out loud. It's been around forever. Stop saying student-athlete. Stop saying benefit the student-athlete. That stuff is nonsense. That stuff is nonsense. In fact, if you're caught saying that, you know what? People should shun you. This is not about them anymore.
You should be fired.
You're done with this stuff. This is a business. It has always been a business. This has no student athlete interest at all with this. And, you know, we say it all the time. This isn't about football. This football gets on a plane, they land, they play, they come home. This is about the volleyball team. This is about the track and field team. It's got to find ways to compete against Rutgers when you live in Seattle. All right. How do you, what do? Do you go out for a 2-week trip out there, play Penn State, Ohio State, stop off at Michigan, come home? What do you do? You know, they're taking the commercial flights. They're not taking the chartered planes that leave when the football team is always on it. They're getting on the Delta flight to New Jersey with a stop, maybe two stops on the way.
Hey, they might be doing Southwest.
Right, exactly. So stop.
No meals on the plane.
No, yeah, right? No meals. So stop talking about the benefit of the student athlete. Nobody wants to hear it. It's done. Say just what it is. This is a business. This is a big money business. And that's what you went for. And that's what the, that's what this is all about. So, I don't know, man. I'm kind of bummed because if the Pac-12 survives, I don't think it will. But if it does, it won't be the Pac-12. It'd be like the Pac-8, and they'll be getting UNLV and Hawaii, maybe. And
I think at this point, the only way they could survive is merging with the Mountain West.
Yeah. That, and again, look at what a powerful position the Mountain West is in.
Oh, my God.
They can be like, why don't you all come over here?
Yeah, we got teams.
And we have a network that's nice. It's not huge, but it's nice. It's a nice little Mountain West Conference network thing. Come over here.
Yeah, you
play Air Force and Colorado State and Wyoming.
Yeah, you're not getting billions from us. But
so just come on over. There's Las Vegas. There's Hawaii. Come on in.
I just feel bad. I feel bad. I do feel bad for the Pac-4 right now.
Oh, I know.
I mean, they're just sitting there left holding the bag like, wait, what just happened?
Yeah. What do we do? Yeah. Wait a minute. Was our guy sleep at the wheel? Did anybody want us?
Nobody.
This is like the kids that get picked last in the kickball tournament,
right?
Oh, my
God.
Oh, God.
Do you imagine? I mean, you have four teams left. They could get picked off. One by one.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what could Oregon go to the Big Ten and go, hey, guys, Oregon State, they're okay. Bring them.
Imagine being a fan of Oregon State right now and being like, wait a minute, hold on. Nobody wants us? Like, nobody's asking us if we want to do this? Nobody wants to. They don't want us to be part of their super conference?
I know.
No, sorry. Sit at home. God. What a wild weekend.
And a lot of this, most of the sadness, too, comes from traditional rivalries.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, there's no more Oregon State, no more Washington
Civil
State.
Civil War, no more Apple Cup.
It's done.
Oh, bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, let's get to soccer. Women's World Cup did not go well for Team USA. What went wrong? What happens now? We'll talk about that. Plus, the Ravens are on the preview clock today. By the way, this is the week that teams are now starting to gear up for that first preseason game. Starts on Thursday with games Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we will get to more on the Baltimore Ravens. It is the AFC North week. We'll have the Steelers and the Browns and the Bengals later this week. But we're starting with the Ravens. Again, an interesting team with a new offensive coordinator that people are excited about. Odell Beckham returning to the NFL after a year off after tearing his ACL at the Super Bowl. And then, of course, Lamar Jackson, who is going to throw more and run less. We'll see. So we have the Ravens coming up in our preview today. The U.S. women's soccer team lost in penalty kicks in the opening round of the knockout stage of the Women's World Cup. They had tied Sweden in regulation and then lost 5-4. Like a millimeter, just a little millimeter, but the replay showed the goal was good, and that was it. Okay, what do we make of this? In the end, what do we make of this? Because I've been saying I think there's no excuses. You go win. I know the league is getting better, but win.
It's an absolute letdown. It was an absolute bungling by Team USA.
Coach or players or both?
Both.
Okay.
Because, and here's the issue, right? I don't think the coach did great tactically. You know, I don't think he put the best players forward. I think he brought a lot of players off for sentimental reasons, or brought them on for sentimental reasons instead of going to younger, fresher players who probably could have made more of an impact. But when it came to the penalties, that's all on the players. We had two chances to win it in the penalties.
Megan Rapinoe missed one, and what was the other one?
And I can't remember the other girl's name, but you know, Megan Rapinoe was the fourth kicker. The other one was the fifth kicker. Both of those goals scored, win the game. Either
okay,
one.
Okay, so did Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe, did they kind of deserve to be on this team? I mean, look, they're legends.
It's a hard thing to say because, you know, I'll go one step another because a lot of people are talking about how it's Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe's final World Cup. Right. Right. I mean, it definitely is for Megan. Alex Morgan hasn't announced anything yet. But there was another woman on the team, Julie Ertz, and she's familiar because she's married to Zach Ertz.
Right.
She was on the team, and she played brilliantly. She was incredible. So, I mean, I can't say, you're kind of just bringing back old players for, you know, sentimental reasons, name brand type, you know, all the type of cliches that normally come with it, because she 100% deserved to be on that team.
But if you are evaluating your team and you realize that Julie Ertz is as good at her position than anybody else, then you say she deserves to be on it. But if you notice Megan Rapinoe has lost a lot of steps and there are young girls on the team, you go, look, I'm not making a blanket decision here that legends need to be on this team. I'm evaluating you independently.
That was the thing I was struggling with, was that I think too much was given to Alex Morgan to, hey, you know, have one more ride in the sunset. Megan Rapinoe never started. They always brought her in as a sub, but I think there were probably better quality players. Sure, she may know how to handle the pressure of the moment a little bit better, but she doesn't have the skill set anymore.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, you know, when you watch that aging quarterback, and he's like, yeah, you know, in his mind, that ball goes everywhere he wants. He just doesn't have that zip on the ball, and that's why constantly he's getting picked off.
I know it's tough. Listen, I wouldn't want to be the coach that makes these kind of decisions on people's legacy because, you know, when they do, you don't get to end it on your terms. You're letting somebody else end it. Alex Morgan, I'd have a hard time. But 4 years from now, she's still kicking around.
Nah, she's done. Now, I will say this. They outplayed Sweden during the game. Regulation, they outplayed. Sweden's goalie, who I'll never know the name. She was amazing. I mean, there were definite two or three shots on goal that should have been goals that she saved. And I'll give them all the credit in the world. But it was, and you know, the fact that the U.S. just kept creating chances after chance after chance. But it was when it was later in the game, when you make those tactical subs, when you're bringing on, you know, I'm sorry, but when you bring on Rapinoe, it kind of looked like it took the air out of the team a little bit because like, okay, now we got to play everything through Rapinoe. Type of thing. You know, it's like, you know, she's going to, you know, because she is that star player. I mean, she was dominant 4 years ago. She was dominant 4 years before that. She's been, you know, an incredible asset to Team America. But it just, you know, now it's like her best role should have been like, you know what? I will be there in practices and I will motivate this team. If you need a late sub because someone got hurt at a midfield position, then put me in. But I should be the first look.
Yeah, I was not surprised they lost. I didn't watch it. I just woke up to the news.
I did not watch it live. I watched a replay of it. So
yeah, so I wasn't surprised they lost. I was actually kind of like, oh, okay, they got it to penalty kicks. All right, because some people thought that they'd lose by two goals. I was like, I don't know about that. I was like, I can't imagine. Like when you get a reset button, like making it to the knockout stage, I'm thinking you're going to play a little tough. You're getting a little scared because you played to a 0-0 tie against Portugal. And then, you know, you almost didn't get in. And then you get a chance to be like, all right, we made it. Let's not go through that again. Let's play our tails off and see what happens. And then when I found out, you know, all right, so they lost some penalty kicks and I watched some replays and whatnot. But it just feels weird to go into a game and go into a match and feel like the women, United States women, I wasn't surprised they lost in this. Like that's to go from winning two straight World Cups I guess I should have saw it coming. The Olympics didn't go their way and whatnot.
No, but I mean, literally, they've been the dominant force in the world as far as the women's side since 1999 when the first Women's World Cup happened and, you know, we beat China in those penalty kicks. We've been in almost every single final.
I just have images of them scoring like the sixth goal of a game and just celebrating leading 6-0.
Well, that's and for me, I think the first writing on the wall was, you know, the struggles they had with Vietnam. Even though they won that game 4-0, it wasn't a dominant 4-0. Like, yeah. You watch the Netherlands, when the Netherlands played Vietnam, they won 7-0, and the Netherlands took their foot off the gas. That's why it was only 7-0. That used to be Team USA.
Yep. Yep. So. I think there was an interesting situation that happened Sunday morning when we talked about this last week about how some people were happy that they lose and some people were going to praise them regardless.
Oh, that's social media was all over it.
This dynamic that we have with this team where we're not exactly unified around them. But I will say, when people are mad at other people for praising them, look, some people said, hey, you know, good job, trying your best, etc. What are they supposed to do? Just rip them to shreds? Like not everybody is as angry with this team. And I don't think that it was wrong for people to say, good try, etc. But I will say this, if you do not hold them accountable, then it's almost insulting to their greatness. That's my point. So I do think that you can say this was very disappointing. This was not something we anticipated. As a fan, I'm kind of upset that they lost, rather than feeling like criticism is hurting their feelings. I think they got to take it. They got to take it. They did not win the World Cup. They did not make it to the finals. I think that's what we would have done we did it to the U.S. men's basketball team at the Olympics in Athens. We didn't say, way to go, Carmelo Anthony and Allen Iverson. You tried your best. It's like, no, they should have won. They should have been better. They should have been better prepared. They were not better prepared. Their tactics were criticized. Their performance was criticized and was justly deserved. But I think there has to be a realization that you better bring the best people you can to the World Cup, because the world is catching up and this isn't supposed to be a swan song for one athlete or another. You want to do that in a bunch of friendlies? Go ahead. That's what What's-Her-Face did. Wasn't it Abby Wambach? She closed out her career by playing in a bunch of friendly matches, but she wasn't going to go where the money was made, right?
Yeah. Soccer, they're called testimonials.
So you can do that. Yeah. So you can do that with an Alex Morgan or Megan Rapinoe.
Yeah,
you want to take her around
the
country and play some friendlies? Go ahead.
Listen, but some of those choices sometimes is tough. I mean, remember Landon Donovan was left off of World Cup, and he was still a decent player, but they were like, no, we're going with this younger squad. David Beckham, I think he made the World Cup, but he was like a fringe player. And you're talking about like one of the greats of all time, especially in England.
Yeah.
You know, one of the most iconic figures in all the sports. You know, I mean, it just, you make those tough decisions sometimes because you have to.
But the end comes for everybody. That's right. The problem. The end comes for everybody. And sooner or later, someone is going to be in a position to have to end it for you if you don't end it yourself.
Yeah,
and that's the problem. You don't really, if you've reached legendary status, I don't care what sport you're in, you don't want somebody to make that for you. Look at Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
Right? Remember when Derek Jeter's final year, he was batting second. He had no business batting second, but they were doing it to him to cater to him. But he got the message. Like, I'm out of here. I'm retiring on my terms because I'm not going to let the Yankees not re-sign me. Right? You got to do that with Megan Rapinoe. You're going to eventually have to do that with Alex Morgan.
You got to. I mean, if she's wanting to come back in 4 years, you got to say no.
You got to say no.
Because she didn't
do
anything in this World Cup.
I don't know. That's right. And it's good the rest of the world is catching up. Should make this a lot more fun.
Yeah.
You know, and more challenging. And now you realize that the world is catching up to you. All right, on the Ravens, we continue our previews this week on the AFC North. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right. As we continue on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. All right. So today's preview team is the Baltimore Ravens. And I think if there was one team this offseason that I actually enjoyed sort of covering their situation, it was with the Ravens. I was really, really curious about how the Ravens were going about it with Lamar Jackson. It was... To me, it was around March, right? It was like all through March that we were wondering, Will they give him a fully guaranteed contract? Will they be the second team that does this? Will they be setting the new bar? That's what Deshaun Watson wanted. I mean, Lamar Jackson wanted. Deshaun Watson had it. Lamar Jackson wanted it. And he didn't get it. And I kind of was wondering, I kept saying they wouldn't. I said, no, they're not going to. They don't have to. It's a franchise tag or nothing. And even though he had the right to negotiate with other teams, I said, I just don't think the other teams are going to put themselves in positions to negotiate with him. No one else was going to be willing to give him a fully guaranteed contract. They could give him more money, but then the Ravens could match it. And the Ravens were like, do our dirty work for us, because you know what? We can just match any offer anybody else gives you. So teams didn't want to do that. So in the end, Jackson was kind of left hanging, but the Ravens took care of him. $260 million later, their quarterback is in camp ready to go for this upcoming season. Now, how much ready to go are we talking about? This is a guy that does get hurt, and this is the guy that sits out a number of games. And while the Ravens can survive without him playing, they can't win without him. They can't win and go far without him. They tried last year, but in the end, they came up short in Cincinnati. But there's a lot to like here, man. There is a lot to like here. And it starts with Todd Monken, who's back in the NFL. His last job was offensive coordinator of the Georgia Bulldogs, and we know what they did there. And now he's got to spread the ball out a little bit more. So what did they do? They went and got Odell Beckham Jr. Now, the last we saw him, he was on the turf at SoFi Stadium in the Super Bowl between the Rams and the Bengals. Last year, he took time off to recover from a torn ACL. Does that mean he's got a slow step? Does that mean he's got like a little notch down? We'll see. But they also drafted Zay Flowers out of Boston College, another wide receiver, slot receiver, that could be a good target for Lamar Jackson. So they have a quarterback that they want to throw more. Now, here's the thing. His career best in attempts is 402. Now, granted, he's played seasons where he's hadn't played the full season, but nevertheless, that's it. And there are a lot of quarterbacks who threw over 400 times last year. 17 of them threw over 400 times last season. A couple more would have gotten over that if they weren't hurt. So this is Todd Monken's job, is to get him to throw more and run less. You know what, though? It's hard to do. I've seen this play many, many times, right? I've seen the quarterback who runs very successfully, and then they go, no, no, no. Because we all know, right, the NFL, you don't want a running quarterback. You don't really want a running quarterback. It's nice to have when they can scramble for a first down. Or like when Justin Fields had those electric 65-yard runs, right? But do you want your quarterback to do that? Do you want that as part of your arsenal? No, you don't. You want that as part of the emergency, you know, break glass sort of situation. That's what you want. You want your quarterback when the plays break down and everybody's covered and there's an opening and you pick up 7 yards with your feet, you pick up 7 yards with your feet. But you are not designing quarterbacks to be running as much as Lamar Jackson runs. Same thing in Chicago. They do not want Justin Fields to be the leading rusher on that team. You don't, because you run the risk of injury and it's not likely to work. We don't usually see that in the NFL. You've got to throw the ball downfield. You've got to be spreading out your offense. That's a better formula than a quarterback that doesn't throw the ball a lot and runs a lot, even if you are magnificent at it as Lamar Jackson. Teams can catch up to that, and you have to change. And the Ravens are willing to change. If Lamar Jackson plays a full season, they could win this division. I mean, they'd be right there with Cincinnati. They were right there with them last year. They could be right there with Cincinnati if he's healthy. They could win this division. Todd Monken, if he can spread this out, and Zay Flowers has a remarkable rookie season, and Odell Beckham is somewhat productive despite coming off a torn ACL, they will win double-digit games. And when you win double-digit games, you're right in the thick of it, right? You can survive a couple of spells where you may lose two in a row or, you know, God forbid, three in a row, but you can get to 10 victories, you're going to be right in the running to win that AFC North. It's them and Cincinnati. Cleveland is going to have to show something. Steelers are going to have to show something. But it's the Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals. I think this is this is an incredibly intriguing team, for given the changes that they're willing to make in philosophy and personnel, knowing what they want to do and getting the players to do it. All right, I'm really curious about Zay Flowers. I think he's fun player to watch.
No, it feels like for the first time in a long time, the offense of the Ravens is actually pretty good.
Yeah, this could be a really fun offense. Not very predictable, right? Especially when you throw some, you know, look, remember it was either Lamar Jackson running the football or throwing to Mark Andrews. That was pretty much it.
Right. Yep.
That was pretty much all they were doing, right? Wide receivers weren't getting a lot of love. Remember, was Hollywood Brown got sent to Arizona? I mean, but it's, again, it's amazing what some money can do for you. Like, all of a sudden the drama's gone, right? So the Ravens, be fun to watch, to talk to Ken Wyman about, because the defense was pretty good. They got one of the best kickers in the game, and special teams in other areas than kicking the ball through the uprights, that was pretty good too. You know, they had some players on return teams that did well. So there was a lot to like about the Ravens. They just lost their quarterback and then lost a tough game. Remember, that was a game where the Bengals returned a fumble like 90 plus yards for a touchdown. Remember that? You know, it wasn't really well played, but it was close. It wasn't Cincinnati's best performance. It made people think they were vulnerable when they were going to Buffalo, which they were not. They got their act together pretty quickly, got the Bills going. So, and like I said earlier, this is a week of preseason games. It starts on Thursday night. There's two. It runs through Sunday. If you're into that kind of thing, right? If you've got your fix with the Hall of Fame game last week, Thursday will start some, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So again, the Ravens on the clock today. But again, the big story, one thing we've been hitting on today was the demise of the Pac-12 that happened over the weekend. What is college football going to look like? I'm waiting and seeing. I will see next year. It's going to be weird. It really is going to be weird to see final rivalry games.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you know that they can come back. They can they can come back in some way. But you know, like I'm glad, like Arizona and Arizona State, if you're going to leave together and go to the same place, right? So you can continue that rivalry. But Oregon and Oregon State, that's a good matchup. Washington State, that's a good fun Apple Cup. They're gone. So you're going to start seeing the last of these this upcoming season, and then 2024 is when it all blows up, right? And it all comes to a head here with the Big 12, the Big 10. And the SEC are now the dominant conferences. If you're the ACC, what does it look like for you? Seriously, right? I mean, does it get annoying if over and over again you're hearing from these schools that they want a bigger cut of the pie or they're going to leave? Where are they going to go? And how much is too much? Can you have a 24-team conference in college football and make it work? Can you? People say you can.
I mean,
but I don't know.
I think we're going to find out.
Yeah, I think it's there's too much attrition.
What, maybe another 5 years?
Yeah.
We'll have here's the other thing, right, that you kept seeing over the weekend was everyone's like, well, let's just get rid of all the conferences and just have, you know, make divisions. And I'm sure that, you know, works fine on paper. I don't think the SEC will ever give up its conference.
No, and to be honest with you, I understand it from a football standpoint. It does not make sense other, like, you're trying to, that's the big argument. You want to keep the travel for the other schools as close knit as possible. But the other problem is that you want, and again, this is solved over time, but you want some continuity in your opponents. You want some feeling of, you know, who's good, who's not good, who are we playing? And if you just group the whole country together, that becomes difficult to do. People kind of want to know where they stand against X, Y, and Z. Now, over time, when you have 18 teams, you're going to be able to figure that out. But right now, going into next year, like if you're a football fan, it's easy to go Texas and Oklahoma. But if you love college baseball, what does that mean if now the Texas and Oklahoma are in? Like, what does it mean if you love, I don't know, swimming? I mean, like the non-revenue sports, what does it look like? But as I said earlier, it's now the realization of this is a strictly financial business. This is not about the growth of student athletes, that nonsense of providing a student athlete a place to showcase their athletic ability. This is all about revenue, making people rich. And it's making athletic directors a little more money. It's making people down the pipeline a lot more money. Eventually, it's going to make the players more money. Because if you are a Johnny Manziel type person with a big charismatic presence across the country, you've got a lot more opportunities in your conference markets to showcase your skills. All right, we'll continue. Hour number two coming up next is Wake Up Call.